rinsed off a little patch of hair with a razor, then unwrapped a derm and slapped it on. "What's that, a trank?"
"Not exactly. It does tranquilize, in a way. It softens the blow, the shock of first contact."
"But I've done first contact a dozen times."
"Yes, but only while your army had control over your, what, system of circulation. You were drugged then, and now you will be drugged as well."
It hit me like a soft slap. He heard my sudden intake of breath.
"Listo?"
"Go ahead." He uncoiled the cable and slipped the jack into my socket with a metallic click. Nothing happened. Then he turned on a switch. Amelia suddenly turned to look at me, and I had the familiar double vision sensation, seeing myself while I looked at her. Of course, it wasn't familiar to her, and I was seized with secondhand confusion and panic. "It gets easy, dear. Hold on." I tried to show her how to separate the two pictures, a mental twist really no harder than defocusing your eyes. After a moment, she got it, calmed, and tried to make words. "You don't have to verbalize." I felt at her. "Just think what you want to say." She asked me to touch my face and run my hand slowly down my chest to my lap, my genitals.
90 seconds, the doctor said. Tenga prisa.
I basked in the wonder of discovery. It wasn't like the difference between blindness and sight, exactly. But it was as if all your life you'd been wearing thick tinted glasses, one lens opaque, and suddenly they were gone. A world full of brilliance, depth, and color. "I'm afraid you get used to it," I felt. "It becomes just another way of seeing."
"Of being," she answered.
In one burst of gestalt, I told her what her options were, and of the danger of staying jacked too long. After a silence, she answered in individual words. I transferred her questions to Dr. Spencer, speaking with robotic slowness. "If I have the jack removed, and the brain damage is such that I can't work, can I have the jack reinstalled?"
"If somebody pays for it, yes, though your perceptions will be diminished."
"I'll pay for it."
"Which one are you?"
"Julian." The pause seemed very long. She spoke through me.
"I'll do it then. But on one condition. First, we make love this way. Have sex. Jacked." "Absolutely not. Every second you talk is increasing the risk. If you do that, you might never return to normal."
I saw him reaching for the switch and grabbed his wrist. "One second." I stood and kissed Amelia, one hand on her breast. There was a momentary storm of shared joy, and then she disappeared as I heard the switch click, and I was kissing an inert simulacrum, tears mingling. I sat back down like a sack falling. He unplugged us and didn't say anything, but gave me a stern look and shook his head. Part of that surge of emotion had been, "Whatever the risk, this is worth it." But whether that came from her, or me, or both of us together, I couldn't say. A man and a woman dressed in green pushed a cart of equipment into the room.
"You have to go now. Come back in 10-12 hours.
"I'd like to scrub and watch," Marty said.
"Very well."
In Spanish, he asked the woman to find Marty a gown and show him to the limpiador. I went down to the lobby and out. The sky was reddish-orange with pollution. I used the last of my Mexican money to buy a mask from a vending machine. I figured I would walk until I found a money changer and a city map. I'd never been to Guadalajara before,
and didn't even know which direction downtown was. In a city twice the size of New York, it probably didn't make much difference. I walked away from the sun. This hospital area was thick with beggars who claimed they needed money for medicine or treatment, who thrust their sick children at you and showed sores or stumps. Some of the men were aggressive. I snarled back in bad Spanish and was glad I'd bribed the border guard $10 to let me bring the putty knife through. The children looked wan, hopeless. I didn't know as much about Mexico as I should, living just north of it, but I was certain they had some form of socialized medicine. Not for everyone, obviously. Like the bounty from the nano forges we graciously allocated to them, I supposed the people in front of the line didn't get there by lot. Some of the beggars pointedly ignored me, or even whispered racial epithets in a language they thought I didn't understand. Things had changed so much. We'd visited Mexico when I was in grade school, and my father, who had grown up in the South, gloried in the color blindness here, being treated like any other gringo. We blame the Nagumi for Mexico's prejuicio, but it's partly America's fault. And example. I came to an 8-lane divided avenue, clogged with slow traffic, and turned right. Not even one beggar per block here. After a mile or so of dusty and loud, low-income housing, I came to a good-sized parking island over an underground mall. I went through a security check, which cost another $5 for the knife, and took the slide walk down to the main level. There were 3 change booths, offering slightly different rates of exchange, all with different commission arrangements. I did the arithmetic in my head, and was not surprised to find that for everyday amounts, the one with the least favorable exchange rate actually gave the best deal. Starving, I found a ceviche shop and had a bowl of octopus, little ones with inch-long legs, along with a couple of tortillas and a pot of tea. Then I went off in search of diversion. There were a half dozen jack shops in a row, offering slightly different adventures from their American counterparts. Be gored by a bull. No, gracias. Perform or receive a sex change operation, either way. Die in childbirth. Relive the agony of Christ. There was a line for that one. Must have been a holy day. Maybe every day is a holy day here. There were also the usual girly boy attractions, and with them, one that offered an accelerated time tour of your own digestive tract. Restrain me. A confusing variety of shops and market stalls, like Portobello, multiplied 100 times. The everyday things that an American had delivered automatically had to be bought here, and not for a fixed price, either. That part was familiar from walking around Portobello. Housewives, a few men, came to the Mercado every morning to haggle over the day's supplies. Still plenty here at 2 in the afternoon. To an outsider, it looks as if half the stalls are scenes of pretty violent argument. Voices raised, arms waving. But it's really just part of the social routine, for vendor and customer alike. What do you mean, 10 pesos for these worthless beans? Last week they were 5 pesos, and excellent quality. Your memory is fading, old woman. Last week there were 8 pesos, and so shriveled I couldn't give them away. These are beans among beans. I could give you 6 pesos. I need beans for supper, and my mother knows how to soften them with soda. Your mother? Send your mother down here, and she'll pay me 9 pesos. And so on. It was a way to pass the time. The real battle would be between 7 and 8 pesos. The fish market was diverting. There was a much greater variety than you found in Texas stores. Large cod and salmon that originally came from the cold North Atlantic and Pacific. Exotic, brightly colored reef fish. Wriggling live eels and tanks of huge Japanese shrimp. all of them produced in town, cloned, and force-grown in vats. The few native fresh fish, whitebait from Lake Chapala mostly, cost 10 times as much as the most exotic. I bought a small plate of those, minnows, sun-dried and marinated, served with lime and hot chili, which would have marked me as a tourist, even if I weren't black and dressed like an American. Counted my pesos and started looking for a gift for Amelia. I'd already done jewelry to help get us into this mess, and she wouldn't wear ethnic clothing. A horrible practical whisper told me to wait until after the operation. But I decided that buying the gift was more for me than for her, anyhow. A commercial kind of substitute for prayer. There was a huge stall of old books, the paper kind, and also the earlier versions of view books, most of them with formats and power supplies decades out of date, were for collectors of electronic curiosities, not readers. They did have 2 shelves of books in English, most of them novels. She'd probably like one, but it posed a dilemma. If a book was well known enough for me to recognize the title, then she probably already had it, or at least had read it. I killed about an hour deciding, reading the first few pages of every book there I hadn't heard of. I finally returned to The Long Goodbye by Raymond Chandler, which was good reading, and also had a leather binding embossed Midnight Mystery Club. I sat by a fountain and read for a while. An engrossing book, a time trip, not only for what it was about and the way it was written, but also the physicality of it, the heavy yellowed paper, the feel and musty smell of the leather, the skin of an animal dead more than a century, if it was real leather. The marble steps weren't all that comfortable, though. My legs fell asleep, from butt to knees. So I wandered a while more. There were more expensive shops on the 2nd floor down, but they included a set of jack booths that cost almost nothing, sponsored by travel agencies in various countries. For 20 pesos, I spent 30 minutes in France. That was a strange experience. The spoken cues were all in rapid Mexican Spanish, hard for me to follow. But of course the unspoken ones were the same as ever. I walked around Montmartre for a while, and then lounged on a slow barge drifting through the Bordeaux region, and finally sat at an inn in Burgundy, feasting on rich cheeses and complex wines. When it was over, I was starving again. Of course, there was a French restaurant right across from the booth, but I didn't even have to look at the menu to know it was beyond me. I retreated back upstairs and found a place with lots of small tables and music that wasn't too loud, and wolfed down a plate of taquitos varios. Then I washed up and finished reading the book there, nursing a beer and a cup of coffee. When I finished the book, it was only 8, still 2 hours before I could check on Amelia. I didn't want to go hang around the clinic, but the mall was getting oppressively loud as it moved from evening into nighttime mode. A 6 mariachi bands competing for attention along with the blare and rumble of modern music from the nightclubs. Some very alluring women sitting in the windows of an escort service, 3 of them wearing PM buttons, which meant they were jacked. That would be a great way to spend the next 2 hours. Jack sex and guilt. I wound up wandering through the residential neighborhood, reasonably confident because of the putty knife, even though the area was run down and a bit menacing. I picked up a bouquet of flowers at the hospital store, half price because they were closing, and went up to the waiting room to wait. Marty was there, jacked into a portable work terminal. He glanced up when I came in, sub-vocalized something into a throat pickup, and unjacked. "It looks pretty good," he said. "Better than I would have expected. Of course, we won't know for sure until she's awake, but her multi-phase EEGs look good. Look normal for her." His tone was anxious. I set the flowers and book down on a low plastic